Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 322 of the Roguecast, recorded February 23rd, 2021. Growl on.
It is back to normal around here, or at least we hope so.
Yeah, we weren't sure if there would be, like, fallout from ice storm shipping and stuff like that this week, but we've mostly gotten stuff in on time.
Well, last people heard the podcast, we had no comics.
Yes.
We have comics now.
We got the comics by Friday that week.
Boy, did we. Yeah, we got all the comics on Friday.
Double dose.
And then, as a result, we left a lot of them up this week. We had to actually expand the wall.
Yeah,
and then we got the new comics today. So, basically, if you have not been here since Ice Storm Zero... you will come in and you will discover 3 weeks worth of comics.
A plethora of comics awaits you.
Yes.
But it's been some good weeks, and there's lots and lots of stuff. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Last Ronin 2 hit, and a bunch of other things.
We're going to talk about all that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about all kinds of comics.
Yep.
We're also probably
But it's nice to have things sort of back to normal. The weather is tolerable out there. It's kind of nice.
Yep.
But once the sun is up and out during the day, so... We've turned a page. I don't know.
Yeah. the clearance sale still going on.
Yes.
Still a few good things back there. I've noticed. I kept there, like the Cassandra Cain, not Cassandra Cain. Cassie.
Stephanie Brown.
Stephanie Brown. That's it. Stephanie Brown, Batgirl. There's still a couple of volumes of that back
there.
Oh man,
that's the stuff.
That's some good stuff. As I was cleaning up yesterday, there's still a lot of good stuff on that table. So worth a look. There's some board games I liked. So, that's worth a look as well. We did not get a ton of new games last week, for obvious reasons. But hopefully we should be getting some new stuff this week. I believe the D&D Candlekeep is about 2 weeks out.
What's Candlekeep?
It's just Candlekeep Mysteries.
Okay.
I think it is an anthology adventure series.
Is Candlekeep in Waterdeep, or
it's
is that its own?
Forgotten Realms. It's a library fortress.
Oh, right. Got it.
Alright, so... News.
Yes.
We saw a trailer for Army of the Dead.
Right, that's Zack Snyder's new movie that's not Justice League Snyder Cut. his return to zombies after his kind of... I don't know if this was his debut movie, but his breakout movie was the 2004 remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Which I'd say we all liked.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I have not gone back to it in a while. I'm afraid to.
I'm a little afraid to, too, but I have watched it off and on over the years, and it's generally held up for me. Of course, I learned only recently that had a James Gunn script,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, that explains
a
lot.
Yeah.
And I also watched an interesting critique of it somewhere that was a General Snyder critique that was a pretty informed one. And it did help me, like, make me re-lens some things, and, like, I'm not sure if it would super hold up, but, like, it has a good cast... It's got a good script. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to give you that one, Snyder. But can he do it again? Can he zombie it up again? I think if I had to guess based on the trailer, the answer is no.
Do you think in his head that this is in the same universe?
I don't know. I mean, it could literally be, but... Randy, you want to hit us up with the premise of this one?
Basically, well, first of all, I want to say the guy who's writing this, I mean, in addition, Zack Snyder gets script credit, which is never a good thing. this guy's a writer who wrote John Wick Chapter 3, which was solid.
Yeah.
And then there's some TV series called Army of the Dead Las Vegas. I don't know if that's what this originally was going to be. And
it almost has to be, because that's kind of like that sounds so close to it.
Like it never got made or something. I don't know. There's actors and everything.
Huh.
I don't know. This is says Scott and highlight his rescue crew's efforts to protect all they love during the first phase of the mysterious zombie outbreak in Vegas. So this almost sounds like a prequel type thing to it.
Maybe something that's being done in conjunction with.
There's no further information on IMDb. I can't tell if it happened, but like it's got Christian Slater in there, like
weird.
Harry Lennox. It's got people. I'm like, oh, I know those names. So Army of the Dead is a military or maybe a mercenary unit. Here we go. Following a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, a group of mercenaries take the ultimate gamble, venturing into the quarantine zone to pull off the greatest heist ever attempted. I'm not sure that's true.
As a premise-wise, that's a solid enough premise for a zombie movie.
A heist in the middle of a zombie makes sense, but like you said, Dave, what good is money?
Yeah. I'm assuming that they're... you know, the thinking might be, well, once the zombies are all dealt with, we'll be rich men in the world that, to come. Or something. I don't know. Maybe they just want to. Maybe they want to heist something that will give them power. But I don't know. It looked like it was a good old money.
I was gonna say it could just be the slickness of the trailer, and there's a secondary reason for the heist. That there's something in the Sands Casino or whatever.
I bet it will be something like that.
But also, I mean, this could be, if it's not in the Dawn of the Dead universe, it is in fact just another zombie movie.
Right.
It could be they've contained an outbreak in Vegas.
Right.
And that it's not post-apocalypse world everywhere, it's just in Vegas.
Not sure. There could be any number of, like, variants like that. Honestly, this was more of a teaser than a trailer. It was just like 40 seconds or something like that. So not a lot to see other than soldiers going through casinos, like an Elvis impersonator zombie, and other little glimpses of things like that, of a little bit of Vegas weirdness, you know, but filtered through zombie style.
Seeing the zombie apocalypse happen in Vegas, where we saw people like...
Right, they're kind of like...
machines and...
Yep.
Yeah. Can I read you the cast a little bit here?
Okay.
So Dave Bautista is the lead.
Okay, I like him.
Garrett Dillahunt.
Yep.
Don't know who that is.
Good. He played the Terminator in the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Okay, yeah, I liked it.
And Tig Notaro is in the cast.
That's weird.
Yep.
He was, Cromartie in Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles?
Yeah, he was the second Cromartie, I think, not the first one.
All right, fair enough.
That's true. Maybe this is a set in the world where of that one movie that was like the Knights of the Round Table, zombies.
What was that movie? Doomsday.
Yeah,
right?
Doomsday.
Yeah. There was somehow medieval stuff and a plague and Road
Warrior.
I think
it was a transporter kind of thing.
Yeah. So allow me to dampen spirits a little further.
Oh.
In the trivia section, this is Snyder's second film based on an original concept by himself, following... Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I knew where this was going. Randy, when you were talking about like him being co-writer, I was like, he's going to bring some of those Sucker Punch chops to bear.
Yikes. I don't know. I'm going to watch it because it's on Netflix. There's no way I'd be paying money to see it.
I'm going to let y'all watch it. And although I have a pretty high level of zombie fandom, I think, or higher-ish, I like the zombies. But I don't think this is something I'm going to watch unless people tell me to watch it.
The other writer on this worked on King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Oh, God.
That was the Guy Ritchie.
This is one of the few movies I fast-forwarded
and
through.
He is also one of the writers on the Obi-Wan Kenobi miniseries.
Oh, sad.
Yeah, so...
That Guy Ritchie King Arthur thing made my eyes bleed. It gave me stigmata of the eye.
Anyway, I'm going to watch it because it's on Netflix, and I like zombie movies, and I like heist movies, but my expectations are super low.
Hate zombies, like heists, hate Zack Snyder. I'm still going to watch it because it's something new.
Yeah, sure. Nick, you're probably going to watch the Zack Snyder Cut of Justice League, aren't you?
Yeah.
Nick was always going to watch it.
Yeah. Now,
you were never going to watch it.
Never
going to
watch it.
And I have always been a maybe, but lately I think I've decided no.
I still think we should somehow watch it all at the same time and record our snide comments as we watch it.
I mean, that's the one way that I could find myself probably.
But that would be watching 4 hours.
Four hours of Justice League. Yeah.
And I don't know if I could.
By the end, I'd be begging for King Arthur by Guy Ritchie.
I think my snark would get meaner and meaner as we got through it.
Now, here's the thing.
No, you would just become morose, and you'd be like, what is even life?
It'd be less fun.
Here's the thing, though. It's still going to be better than King Arthur.
I bet it's
regardless.
Not. I bet it's
actually,
not.
Actually, that could be true.
Guy Ritchie's a better director than Zack Snyder.
No, Randy, you don't know. You don't know. It's not like the other ones.
I fast-forwarded through, like, at least 45%
of I have not watched it yet. I probably will, because I love Guy Ritchie's movies. I know it's probably terrible. I know there's another one that he did, Swept Away, with him when he was married to Madonna. Like, I know that Guy Ritchie can flop. I'm just saying, worse than Zack Snyder, I don't know if I believe that.
Even if you took only... I mean, I know that they're cobbling this together. Also, it's going to have lots of stuff that I've already seen from the Wheaton version of it. And that had some entertaining moments in it. Like, any given two or three moments just pulled from that, that I know will have to probably exist in this one, were better than all of King Arthur.
I mean, and we're also going to get Jesus Christ Joker.
That's true. Randy, did you see the promotional pic of Joker crown of thorns?
Yes,
yeah.
Speaking of things that look disappointing, Marvel's MODOK teaser on Hulu. I was never super excited about this.
I mean, it's
MODOK being played for a joke.
Y'all came back on board, though, after you read the MODOK comic.
Because Patton Oswalt, he's voicing MODOK,
yeah,
and he's writing the MODOK comic, and it's been super fun, except for last issue that was all about Gwenpool for some reason.
But he also, isn't he, like, writing or co-writing some of the show?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, is it just a bad trailer? I also don't like the special effects. I don't like it. Looks like
claymation.
It looks like Robot Chicken.
It looks like Robot Chicken, and yeah, I'm not into it.
It's now we have certainly seen, especially in these kind of like I guess I'm going to say sort of gimmicky ones like this or Star Trek Lower Decks and some other ones that they can have like a trailer that kind of actually pulls some of the lamer jokes because they I don't know they just think it's a more grabbery. They test better, or whatever. And then it actually ends up being halfway decent.
My counterpoint for this would be that when Harley Quinn, when they did the trailer for Harley Quinn, I was like, oh, this looks dumb. And then it turned out to be great.
Yep. And I did not end up being won over by Lower Decks, so I can certainly see that a bad trailer could also still lead to a show I don't like. But I will agree. I think we would all agree that Harley Quinn was a very good show.
It was.
So,
it was a great show.
So this is what you got to live up to, MODOK. You got to live up to Harley. You got to live. Can you meet DC standards? Say it, Randy. Make them say it. No. Say the words.
No.
Marvel. Maybe if Marvel tries really hard, they could be as good as DC.
No. Hulu. This isn't Marvel. I posted that big thing of like all the different projects that are coming out.
Yeah.
Like movies and TV, and someone was like, MODOK got left off. I'm like, no, that's Hulu. That is not Marvel.
none of us were exactly enthralled by this trailer.
This is the remnants of Jeff Loeb's kingdom.
Or it's going to end up being funny.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Whatever. There is a Superman reboot in the works from producer J.J. Abrams and writer Ta-Nehisi Coates.
A slightly, Superman movies, because this weirdly came exactly on the heels of the really was seemingly very well received Superman and Lois Lane TV show that just started up, and they're like, "We're rebooting Superman," and I'm like, "You just did."
But TV and movie is different.
And by the way, we'll talk about that later on in the show. Yep. But yes, it is a movie thing. And Randy, has there been anything else revealed?
No. A lot of my friends are like, "Boy, I hope Henry Cavill's still in it." He said he was interested, and I'm like, "Dave, you made the point that Ta-Nehisi Coates, they may be coming to do the Black Superman."
I think so, and I honestly don't think there's a big point in like either. Did they say the words reboot?
They did say the words reboot.
You're not that. No one. I don't think in the history, like maybe once or twice, but when have they ever rebooted with the same actor?
I don't think it's ever happened.
No,
and I don't think it's a good idea. I think there's a reason you want a clean slate, and I think this is the time to go with a Superman of color.
I also think a lot of people are like, Henry Cavill didn't ever got his shot, and I'm like, the dude had like three movies. Like,
yeah,
I agree, none of it is his fault.
Right,
like he's a fine actor,
but we don't need to like subsidize his happiness because we think he's a neat guy.
I think he's probably plenty happy. I think he got paid for all three of those movies.
Yeah.
Technically all four, since Justice League was made twice.
And I guess the deal is we all want, Chris Evans is the magical dream story where he seems to embody Cap in life and on the show. What a great thing. But, that is a very rare thing, and, he happened to get great writing right out of the gate.
Yep.
That didn't happen at all with poor Henry Cavill.
He gets to go on being the Witcher. That's fine.
Yeah.
But, so this is going to have, I do think the time is right, and part of it is, and I feel like this could be almost a calculated move on DC's part, is looking at, like, Black Panther literally changed the world.
Yeah.
They were running movies in, I don't remember if it was Saudi Arabia, someplace where they had not run movies in like 30 years or something. And that was the first one that they ran. It redefined a new style of Afrofuturism.
Yeah.
And is going to be having repercussions for forever now. And then you also have the success of Miles Morales, who is takes a character, this would be more like Superman, where he takes a character that has traditionally been a white dude, was like an alternate version of him, hugely successful with across the board.
So if they were to do this,
are
they doing is it Clark Kent still, or are they going to do like the Superman of Earth, 23 or whatever it is? President Superman. Like, would they do that, or would they go like
And my friend Fathery pointed out, there was also, was it like not Zor-El, but Van-Zell, whatever.
Yeah.
The Superman from the Earth 2 comic that James Robinson and later Tom Taylor wrote, who was also African-American, African Kryptonian. and he... I think you don't bother... I think you do the Miles Morales, and he is an alternate universe one who had grew up in different conditions...
Yeah.
And let him be different and not just Clark with some tweaks.
Yeah.
I am curious. Here's the thing. Ta-Nehisi Coates is also, he's writing Captain America.
Yep.
He is not just writing black people.
Right.
So I think it's entirely possible they are going to do a Clark Kent riff.
And that's possible too.
But I'm more excited about the idea of a black Superman doing something different, especially if they got to the Morrison stuff.
I remember the first time I really thought about it in the early 2000s. I think it was kind of when colorblind casting was starting to kind of like get into the fan debates and stuff like that. And I was thinking that even then he was a little old, but if you had gotten like 28, 30 year old Denzel Washington,
perfect. Yes.
He would have had, he has that quality as an actor of like just the same way Christopher Reeve did of being sort of innately kind of heroic and likable.
Well, I almost would pitch his son, the guy who's in Tenet, John David Washington.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he could possibly play the role.
Yeah, I agree. I would be basing that more on his role in Black Klansman, right?
But I've never seen him clean shaven, right? Isn't he always have a mighty beard? Or in Black Klansman, is he clean shaven?
He's got a beard in that, I think.
Yeah, I think he's always got the mighty beard.
Did he in Tenet?
It wasn't like a mighty beard, but I think he had a little bit of
his beard. Everybody was suave in Tenet.
I don't know if you can do, if Superman can have a beard. I don't know. It's weird.
Although, that wouldn't be the strangest thing, actually.
No, Dave. Him being African-American is not a change. I'm fine with that. But no beards for Superman.
No!
Hashtag no beards for Superman.
A million years ago, my grandmother, who had all sorts of weird older person prejudices, among them, she did not like beards. She would say, like, it looks like he's trying to hide something.
You can't trust a man with a beard. That's all I'm saying.
Preach on, Beardo.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. If a guy's a beard, if he's bald, if he wears glasses, you cannot trust him.
Yeah. Probably some kind of weirdo nerd freak killer.
Exactly.
Nick, general thoughts? Interested? Not interested? Is J.J. Abrams a hook or no?
I mean, I'm interested regardless. I think I'd give anything a try.
DC
Abrams
is a bit of like, you know, you and I both have some fondness for the DC movies.
Yeah.
But it is, I think we would both be pretty easy to acknowledge, it's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah.
You might get something really fun like Shazam or Wonder Woman or whatever, or you might get Suicide Squad.
I agree with half of that.
no one's talking to you, sir. Your opinion is well known. But yes, it's a kind of a random thing, so it's like, why not?
Yeah.
Abrams is a guy who, I'm trying to think of, like, what projects has he worked on that he wasn't writer on?
Now, he's only producer. He's not directing. It's probably just a geek cred kind of thing.
Yeah.
He wants to say he worked on Superman.
So we'd have no idea who the director would be.
Bad
at this
Robot
point.
Will get the little thing, that's about it.
Okay.
Maybe if they were to get, say, Drew Goddard involved somehow, that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
He's a Bad Robot guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I consider myself interested.
David Fincher and his 7 screenwriter are adapting The Killer. You guys remember The Killer? The
comic?
The European comic about an assassin?
Oh, I saw that they had a new project. I did not know that's what it was.
We all liked this book.
Yeah. I fell off of it before it was all done.
Exactly,
and
so did I.
Michael Fassbender is circling the lead role. He'd be great as the... Although...
That is weird, though.
The guy's like an older guy.
I mean, yeah. Fassbender's not young.
No, but
I thought
he
was like a big racing... He dropped acting to be a race car driver.
I don't know. you know who I actually would cast? Because there's a picture here of actually David Fincher. But I'm like Bradley Whitford or one of these guys, like an older guy, I think would have been a better call for
The
Killer.
I think Fassbender's older than Bradley Whitford.
Is he really? Oh, poor Bradley Whitford.
So this was a comic that was a European comic that came out maybe about 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a ways back now.
Yep.
That followed a professional killer, and it walked the line somewhere between being a little bit heightened, mm-hmm. but not like an action-adventure assassin movie. There was still like these kind of meditations on it. He was clearly like a sociopath, as I recall.
Yeah.
He's like really...
But he was an interesting sociopath.
He was an interesting sociopath, and the stories were interesting. It was almost like weird dark procedurals through his eyes.
Yeah.
including, like, I remember, like, he had to go on a stakeout to hunt somebody, and he was just bored out of his mind in the hotel room for weeks on end. Yeah. He had to wait this dude out.
Okay, so you said Bradley Whitford, and my brain interpreted that as Bradley Cooper.
Those different are definitely guys. Different guys.
Different guys.
Different person. Yes. So, yes, Bradley Whitford is 61, and Fassbender is 40.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot more sense.
But I didn't think the killer was, like,
I think
you're right. He's in his 40s.
I can't picture him in my head, actually. So
I just remember glasses, the horn-rimmed glasses kind of thing.
Yeah. He looks a little nerdy. I'm not sure that Fassbender could pull that off.
Yeah.
He's even more of a suave killer.
He's too sexy?
He's too sexy to kill people.
Maybe they can freak him up.
Anyway, I love this graphic novel series. I didn't finish it either.
You know what's weird? Like, it wasn't... It had some depth to it that was surprising for the subject matter.
Yeah.
But it's not as deep as most of, like, Fincher's movies and TV shows tend to go. Yeah. It feels a little bit like a step backward.
But remember that monologue he has about killing and about, like, taking lives? That felt very Fincher-esque. It's true.
Did he do something where he's, like, you know, kind of lensed it through capitalism or something like that?
He's basically saying everybody's a killer and that kind of stuff. And it was like sounds like a justification, but it's actually a good justification.
Right, and you're like, it almost works.
Yeah.
That's probably what
maybe
won
he wants
him
to
over.
Step away from, like, real crime and do something sort of papa a little bit.
It could be. I could see it.
Also, Dave, this is a book about an assassin that you liked, which means it must be the best book about assassins.
No, this was actually before Dave's embargo on assassins.
That is true, but it would be when I was beginning to make up my mind about that.
Dave's burgeoning assassin hatred was burning even then.
Will he drop said embargo to watch a David Fincher assassin movie?
I don't watch, like, all Fincher movies, so...
Yeah, I still haven't watched Mank.
Yeah, I'm curious about that one, but it's not, like, shouting out for me to hurry up.
Will you watch Assassins starring Antonio Banderas?
Yes. I've watched that multiple
and
times.
And Stallone? Is it Stallone?
Yes. Okay. Assassins is a Stallone Banderas. Yes.
Assassinated his career.
Assassinated my interest in Antonio Banderas.
I'll allow this one to stay on the radar because of Fincher.
This is exciting news. The Avatar The Last Airbender that Netflix was developing...
was going to be a live action.
Yeah, it was going to be live action. The original creators, Brian Konietzko and Michael Dante DiMartino left, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that project's dead. If not, it probably should be. But they just announced that they are going to be creating new stories in the Avatar world, starting with a new Avatar movie.
Animated?
Yep.
Presumably.
Animated movie. Set to be in production in 2021. And
it's going to air on Netflix.
So specifically, but like, is it set in, like, Aang's time?
We don't know.
Okay. So it could be Aang, Korra, or some unexplored era.
Yeah, who knows?
Okay.
But
it's a pretty well-developed world, and those guys did some of the best cartoons of all time. So, pretty decent possibilities.
I'm glad to see more Avatar. I watched a couple episodes last night and was reminded how good it is.
I hope that a platypus bear is finally... It's a nature documentary about platypus bears.
So I was watching this, and there was a question of, if Appa is a sky bison, why does he have the tail and everything? Is he a blend of something else? Did we ever find that out?
I don't think so.
I remember reading in one of those books, I think, that their animal combos were something that was like... almost like a minor thing early on, or like even just like a little bit of a joke that became
and
something. So I do think that there's definitely elements of Avatar that, although it's very well planned overall, that just happened over time.
Yeah.
Or just like, he looked neat, he's a sky bison, but he wasn't necessarily a bison, fox, muskrat. or something like that.
Bison, fox, muskrat. Is that that's a military acronym, right?
Yeah.
If something goes really wrong, it's a bison, fox, muskrat situation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. you guys out there in the military know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. It's totally gone. It's totally gone. BFM.
Yes.
Speaking of the military.
Yes.
Sort of. They're working on a G.I. Joe spinoff featuring Lady J for an Amazon Prime live action series, which everybody's using pictures of Adrian Palicki, who was Lady J in the G.I. Joe sequel.
Retaliation.
And
yeah.
I was like, okay, cool. I like Adrian Palicki. Turns out she's not attached to this in any way.
Right.
This is This is the...
That's just their clickbait image that they're choosing?
Yeah.
They found a Lady J.
It's going to be a standalone story revolving around G.I. Joe's undercover operative known as Lady J.
Yep.
Created by Eric Olsson from Daredevil and Man of the High Castle.
This sounds a little like, based on those kind of, that pedigree, on the darker G.I. Joe thing where they did, like, the story with Chuckles. They're also an undercover guy.
Yeah,
who was that? Was that Christos Gage?
That was Christos Gage. Mike Costa?
Yeah.
Yeah. This sounds like that. And, like, I like G.I. Joe with some bombast. If they had the bombast too, Cobra's got to be like, they have to, like, all their main dudes need to be wearing Cobra uniforms and stuff. Yeah. I understand there'll be some undercover stuff, but
we need to see those Cobra uniforms.
I want to see Tomax and Zaymot in there, but make them cool, you know, make them like the head of the, you know, the stealth division and the Crimson Guards and all that.
Dr. Mindbender or no one else.
We're not asking for Dreadnoks. You don't have to give us Dreadnoks. I'll be happy if you give us Dreadnoks.
What they don't have to do is they don't have to give me Crystal Ball or Raptor.
You don't have to.
Crystal Ball was actually in that, Chuckles.
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
Well, that makes sense as, like, an interrogator type person or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, this is an odd call, but, like, I think everybody at least likes Lady J.
Yeah.
The comics and cartoons never did a very good job, I think, of portraying her as being an intelligence agent, though.
No.
She was, you know, like a lot of G.I. Joe guys, sort of a, you know, a... infantry type person when they needed her to be, a paratrooper when they needed her to be.
Yeah, she had a rocket javelin.
She had a cool rocket javelin with just the toy like and cartoon. I guess on the cartoon she actually just had javelins.
Yeah.
But they were like almost like Hawkeye trick javelins.
And in the comic it was like a rifle that fired giant spears.
That was what the toy was too.
Remember when James Bond switched from using the Walther PPK to a big spear gun? I thought it was a weird choice.
I mean, it's hard to carry that around.
You know, Bond did kill a guy with a spear gun in... License to Kill.
Yeah, it was License to Kill.
Okay, well.
Compliments clearly, of Shocky.
Clearly,
that's how he said it.
Clearly Lady J is just riffing off the best spy of all time.
Will we ever get to see her in the green fatigues with the cap on? She's got to have the cap.
You don't have to do that knob. Like, just have her coming out of training or something, I feel like.
That'd be cool.
I think it should be her thing that, like, when she's, like, in her civilian identity, back at her place, wherever she can kind of let her hair down, so to speak, she should wear the cap. I think it should be a thing.
I mean, military TV shows tend to go over pretty well. And, I mean, Amazon's already got a good one with the Jack Ryan stuff, so this sort of makes sense.
The same way if... Like, it has to be good, but Arrow was a stealth introduction of all things CW, or all the CW's DC superheroes.
Yep.
Is there any chance of that an unusual project like this could be how G.I. Joe, the actual door to, like, a G.I. Joe universe?
Cut to 2027 and Snow Job the series.
Well, I know we're getting Snake Eyes, well, getting is relative in this world, but I know it's, like, already filmed.
Do we think that there'll be a connection between those properties, or that they will be TV connected?
So, yeah.
But, yeah. Well, anyway, as G.I. Joe fans, I think we probably all wish it luck.
Yeah.
A little bit of caution.
Yeah.
Last bit of news is Magic the Gathering news. Magic just announced they're doing something called... They've done these, like, they do the secret lair drops, which is usually stuff we can't get.
Yeah.
But, like, the one that was The Walking Dead, they had a bunch of Walking Dead cards.
Yeah, it's like the Bob Ross kind of thing.
Yeah, and they did the Bob Ross art. So they're announcing an expansion that's actually going to be in shops, so we will be getting this when it comes out. Warhammer 40K and Lord of the Rings Magic. Which is interesting... Because Warhammer 40K had a short-lived card game.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, what exactly is the... what are the secret lairs?
They're just like limited product kind of things.
So this is not like a commitment? This isn't going to be a whole wave of it?
So, like, this is something else. This is not secret lairs.
Oh, okay.
These are going to be sold in Magic channels. Oh,
okay.
So you're going to have, like, an Emperor card?
That'd be my guess. There'll be, like, a powerful Emperor card. There'll be Space Marines.
As a Planeswalker?
It is weird, though.
Yeah, or, like, a Commander?
Yeah, that would make sense.
Although there is plenty of merch, franchise merchandised Lord of the Rings stuff. I do know that, I guess, like, when was it Christopher Tolkien, his son died? Yeah. I think they kind of opened up the license a little bit. Because it does It does not feel like Magic the Gathering was something that Lord of the Rings would have allowed for previously.
There was a Lord of the Rings card game, too.
Yeah, but that was its own thing. This is, like, them tagging along on another property.
Yeah, this is Hasbro being like, we won't give you money.
Yeah. And then what was the other license?
40K. Yeah.
That is weird. I mean, 40K feels like... because there's games with both of them, it almost feels like they're working with competitors.
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting. I'm not particularly against it. It's weird.
It is weird.
But they did Godzilla before, so...
Yeah.
Not that much weirder than Godzilla.
I mean, they're doing Forgotten Realms, which makes sense. It's their property.
Right.
How long until Universes Beyond has either DC or Marvel?
I need them to do Battlestar Galactica. I need them to do Tron.
You just want
to
fight Starbuck versus the Balrog?
Yes.
These would be like Heroclix. Just a weird mix of stuff.
Yes.
All right, that's it for news for us for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the last 3 weeks. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 17th, February 24th, and March 3rd. This is a first, guys. We've never talked 3 weeks of comics.
Yeah.
This makes it almost a month worth of comics.
Yeah. We'll kind of do it pretty quickly, I think, but there's definitely some highlights in there.
Yeah, well, let's start off with... Should we start with this week or last couple weeks? What do you want
let's,
to do?
I say let's
start this week.
I agree. Let's do this week.
Let's do the big focus.
People want to know about the Keanu Reeves comic.
Let's start with what's fresh. Let's talk about Berserker number one.
It's spelled without vowels, but isn't he just called Berserker in the comic?
So do you think this is Matt Kent, or do you think Keanu Reeves is like, let's spell Berserker with some Z's?
Here's what I think. The character is 80,000 years old.
Yeah.
He was born before vowels.
Oh, I like it. I mean, as a no prize, I kind of works.
He doesn't know what E's are.
Now, y'all, I didn't get to read the whole thing, so tell me, as the uninitiated, without spoiling it too much, what is the premise of this book? Which we did feel like it is will probably become a Keanu Reeves movie, right?
It is an immortal soldier who works for a covert government agency that has promised to find him a way to make him mortal, which is all he wants.
Yes. Oh, interesting. And doesn't he have some mystery about his past or something?
Yeah,
he has glowy eyes.
Does he have lost memories?
He does, and they start getting more memories at the end. I wonder if the next issue is going to be more like a little bit of the who he was prior to...
Like a flashback issue, maybe?
Because this is all modern. Lot of this issue is Keanu kicking ass, and it is Keanu. Like, the artist, Ron Garney, doing fantastic
great artwork.
With Bill Crabtree on colors, who's also one of the really good colorists in the business. It's basically him, like, one-man armying his way through a country...
In a pretty R-rated, I'm going to say the style somewhat of The Boys, but like not, it's not a superhero book, but it's just that level of kind of violence.
Yeah,
and nor is it like tongue-in-cheek. It's very serious in kind of its portrayal.
Yeah.
I mean, even though the concepts of maybe like smashing somebody's jaw off with a punch and...
Does he enjoy his work? Is he like a...
He's kind of a grizzled mercenary.
There's no like... emotion in it.
He doesn't talk a lot.
Okay.
There is some good dialogue toward the end when they start talking to the guy, and I thought this was interesting. The military guy basically is like, he's like, you want to die? And he's like, I don't want to die, I just want to be able to die.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it's a warrior thing, he's like, I'm bored, nothing threatens me.
Right. That's One Punch Man's problem.
It is One Punch Man's problem. If only Berserker could get one punch in.
Brozerker.
But I mean, if you like Keanu, if you like John Wick, if you...
I feel like John Wick is a good comparison.
If you liked Old Guard.
Yeah.
Old Guard.
Which this feels a piece of. John Wick's
or you
really
just
want
to get in on the ground floor of what is almost certain to become a notable thing.
Yeah.
It's a really good action comic. Like, the first half is almost silent action. And it's really good.
You'll be able to tell your friends who are, when they're going to see the movie, you're like, I actually read this as a comic 2 years ago.
Yep.
And I'm going to spoil it for you right now.
That's right. Do you want to brag to your friends? That's Berserker's good for that. The other big thing this week is Nocterra. A lot of weird names this week. This is Scott Snyder and Tony Daniels' book. They actually kickstarted this. I think that there was like some weird limited hardcover thing.
Kickstarter, huh?
Yeah.
And that's kind of it's a bit of an odd thing, like... Scott Snyder teams up with a lot of different dudes, but usually they're a little bit more on that indie Jeff Lemire side. And who's the artist again?
Tony Daniel.
He's just a little bit more pop. He was like kind of one of those Top Cow guys back in the day, or Image guys.
This has a great high concept. It's sort of like a
world where darkness fell one day,
and then everybody who's out in the dark, if you're not hit by sunlight or artificial sunlight or some kind of light, you mutate.
Yeah.
So it is like. Nick, Love and Monsters came to mind?
Yeah, a little bit. Darker than that, though.
Also, The Quiet Place.
Yep.
The sort of notion of this world where basically suddenly monsters are real and they're everywhere and just, like, trying to find a place to survive.
And also, for those you gamers out there, Alan Wake, who has to, shadows and darkness are, like, the threat in the game. You have to, like, move between pools of light in the game, like, where lights are and stuff.
I also got a little bit of a vibe of, like, Last of Us.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And so, that survivalist horror.
There's... Scott Snyder clearly has thought a lot about this premise. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, like, people... Everybody knows what they were doing the day, like, the world went dark. I forget what they... What do they call it? The PM?
The PM.
Yeah. And even though there's, like, a sort of a... It's a little bit of a pop look to the art. I'm going to say it also has some of that Jim Lee vibe, you know,
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, Tony Daniels even though he's gone moved, away from that.
Yeah. But it's... But there's some depth of story and character going on here. Oh, anyway, the lead character, though. What's her name?
Lead character's name is, I don't remember.
Something, Rachel Rigg. Something Rigg.
Yeah, something Rigg.
But she drives a big, 18-wheeler truck, and she transports people and or goods through, like, dangerous, monstery territories.
She is what they call a ferryman. And yeah, she takes them to the shelters that have sun, have light, and they drive through this crazy, and so there's monsters attacking her truck.
Yeah. I think this is going to go over pretty well with people.
Snyder does some fun world building in here, and I like his characters. His lead character, her brother, her, I think, adoptive brother, is maybe, like, being slowly overtaken by the darkness. She's trying to find a way to cure him, and then she gets an offer from someone and to do a big run for them, and there's maybe something mysterious about them.
Is this an ongoing series or a miniseries?
I think it's a miniseries.
Because I can actually see either way, but I would imagine, like, it does feel like something that might do, like, end at a point and then leave the
if door
open.
If this isn't turned into a TV series or something in the next...
It's a missed opportunity.
Like, year, I'm going to be very surprised. Because Scott Snyder basically has created a pilot episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it does everything it needs to do. Mm-hmm. It does it well.
Yeah, and it feels like he... Yeah, because he... thought the world about the world a lot. It has that vibe of walking into a show where you kind of like you kind of sense the series bible, feel the world building in a pretty good way. Not like one of those like it's just blah 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 world building.
You know, there's an ad in the back of this for Undiscovered Country Images in this Undiscovered Country.
Yeah.
And I think people who like that will like this. It does feel like a sort of slightly post-apocalyptic sci-fi premise. But it's interesting. Let's talk about DC. They Future State wrapped up last week.
I just want to let you know that Randy's about to go on a binge of loving DC, which I never thought
would
happen.
Well, let's call it liking.
Loving, no. Liking, not hating.
I'm just saying, in your way, that is loving.
That
DC.
Is true. If you're grading on a curve, and we are in a binary system, either love or hate.
Yep. So that means by definition today you love DC.
So. This week they launched DC Infinite Frontier. That is their new sort of overarching line. It is also a one-shot that is going to lead into a mini-series this summer. And the number zero is basically it's got creative teams from, I think, 8 different books?
Yeah, as a framing story, it seems like they had Wonder Woman talking to this, you know, the Quintessence, which are five godlike people that's like High Father and Spectre and stuff like that, all these mega powerful cosmic presences.
Yep.
And I didn't actually see how they did it, Randy, but they sort of contrive a way that they sort of tour her around.
Well, they're basically, it is Ganthet of the Guardians.
Yep.
Hera, High Father... Phantom Stranger and Spectre, I think.
Yep, that sounds right. I remember those.
Oh, there's two bearded dudes. I can't quite figure that one out. Is that the Monitor somehow? I don't know. Anyway, there's five, like, mega-powerful beings, and then the Spectre's, like, their agent, and they are wanting Wonder Woman to basically become one of them, and she wants to make sure the world's going to be okay. So they basically turn on this tour of the DC Universe. So we see Superman as written by the new writer. We see the... Joker breakout of Arkham that is going to...
Is that what was going on in Suicide Squad as well?
Yeah, that's going to tie into Suicide Squad, Batman, Batgirl.
That's interesting. That's a more considered kind of cohesive approach than I'd seen before.
We see Oracle and her. She's operating with the two new Batgirls, or the old Batgirls, Stephanie Brown and Cassandra Cain. And then Grifter is working with the Foxes, who are now richer than Wayne because he lost all his money, apparently. We see Nubia and Hippolyta, and that's going to lead into Justice League. We see the new Yara Flor Justice Group. We see there's a scene with Justice Society of America and a sort of big reveal for Alan Scott. There's a look at Titans Academy, which is coming up. There is a
Stargirl
one-shot story.
And that's by Jeff Johns himself. These are not like excerpts from those books. This is original little shorts from them.
Original material teasing like these characters. And here's the thing.
This book is like the gateway to the current DC.
Yeah. I don't know if there's going to be a Stargirl series. I hope there is because it's a good little thing. I don't know if there's going to be a Green Arrow Black Canary series. I hope there is. It's pretty good. But the creator of the new writer on Superman does write a few pages in here, and it's a good little thing. Teen Titans Academy is by the creators who are doing that book, and it's a little teaser for a bunch of stuff. I liked all these little bits and pieces, and I like the thing they're setting up, and there's a big thing at the end, which will lead into their crossover for the summer, I'm sure.
What is it?
a classic. I liked this. I actually thought it was a pretty good overview of DC.
It does seem like if you even have like any sort of passing interest in DC or some of those characters that we mentioned, you probably want to pick this one up. It is the link.
Yep. Swamp Thing. Did you guys read Swamp Thing?
Did not. But the premise of it sounded interesting. There's like a new sort of host for Swamp Thing.
Yeah, there's a new guy. It's got beautiful art by Mike Perkins.
Oh, that was Perkins.
Yeah. The same team did the Future State Swamp Thing.
And I believe it is a new Indian or Indian-American guy who seems to have been sort of overtaken by Swamp Thing. It's very much sort of body horror stuff.
Right. They were picking up on stuff, I think, you know, somewhat from the TV show.
Yep.
From, you know, and just Swamp Thing is always these days, and well, I guess really from conception, is always going to be tinged with some style of horror.
And it's like he's facing off with some sort of, like, urban legend in the desert of...
Yeah.
New Mexico, maybe.
Yeah, it sounded like a cool premise. It's one I want to check out for sure.
It's a good first issue. Crime Syndicate number one, which is kind of an interesting thing to do. The evil Justice League gets their own miniseries.
Yep, I believe I read that the backup story kind of follows the origin of their Ultraman, a.k.a. Evil Superman.
Yep.
But yeah, these guys have been around since the Silver Age, maybe. But, like, I think there's been increasing interest in them.
Yeah.
They're a cool and fascinating version of the Dark Justice League. Maybe ever since Crisis on Infinite Earths had their world destroyed in it.
Dave, you read Sensational Wonder Woman, right?
I did not. I did not.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, I didn't get around to too much of the DC stuff.
Okay. So I know Sensational Wonder Woman is just it's a digital first series.
No.
I think it's just a Wonder Woman series. I did not get a chance to read it, actually.
I saw that the art looked cool. That's that much I knew.
There is a new Suicide Squad featuring Peacemaker, who, of course, is going to be on the HBO Max TV show and the James Gunn movie.
Amanda Waller is still running things, but he's like the field leader.
Basically replacing Flag, who is not crazy about this.
Nope. Flag is in there. Yeah, some Z-list guys that...
you always
and
have
they're breaking someone in, doesn't make it out
aren't
on.
They breaking into the asylum to get the Talon?
Like so they're breaking into Arkham Asylum after, the Talon from the Court of Owls. One of those, I don't know if there's... I know there's more than one, but he's one of them, and...
He's like the most scary one, I think.
He's super crazy dangerous. Like, they're like, hey, you're coming with us, and he just freaks the hell out on them. And it's like, in the tradition of Suicide Squad missions... goes wrong almost immediately. Plus, there's that other event that we talked about that coincides with it.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was a good first issue. I thought the art was really nice too.
Yeah, that guy reminded me. We already talked about of Ivan Reiss, Rags Morales, some of those kind of artists.
Yeah. And then it is not number one, but Batman number 106, which starts a new story from James Tynion and Jorge Jimenez. Has a redesigned Scarecrow who we all thought looked pretty badass.
Yeah. It is a creepy, weird design.
It sees Batman operating with a new partner.
Yep.
Sees him operating with less money.
After the events of Joker War.
And then also sees the beginning of maybe the Magistrate, which we saw in Future State Batman.
Yep. It's It's a really good kind of first issue.
Yeah.
Is it detective-y? Is it superhero-y?
It's more superhero-y.
Yeah, more superhero-y. Okay.
I saw that, like, some of his other villains, all of which looked, the art in it was, like, super slick.
The
like,
art's fantastic.
It felt like a kind of an, almost like an original aesthetic in a way for yeah. Batman. I know, I'm like, a lot of people have drawn Batman, but I can't really think of anything that looks quite like this.
It reminds me of Sean Murphy.
Yeah.
It reminds a little bit of, God, who's that guy? A little bit Dan Mora to some extent.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's got this sort of stylized look to it.
Yeah, and yet, but the colors are very kind of like, almost like Blade Runner-y or yeah. something like that. It's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It seems like well worth a check.
All right, so let's jump over to Marvel. They also have a bunch of number ones this week. Peach Momoko, who you may know from every variant cover ever.
Yep.
Is writing and drawing something called Demon Days, which is basically going to be about sort of demons, spirits, monsters, and magic in the Marvel Universe. She starts off with an X-Men tale that features a riff on Jubilee, Psylocke.
I think they're all sort of... It's like it's lensed through like Japanese folklore and legends specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's going to be all of them.
Yes. It was cute. It reminded me of Logan's Fairy Tale a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
It reminded me of Usagi a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, the star is her artwork, which is just gorgeous. But there's some cool redesigns for like... Venom and things like that.
Yeah,
so.
Venom as Oni was kind of fun.
Yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed that one.
King in Black continues to roll on. This week there's a one-shot King in Black, Wiccan, and Hulkling, which I think there may be a little extra interest because Wiccan and Hulkling, of course, were in WandaVision.
Yep.
But this is a one-shot about basically the new Emperor and his court wizard of the new Kree-Skrull alliance, which came out of Empire. They are offered a vacation package by the Shi'ar, and with their overly enthusiastic female bodyguard, who is an accuser, they go off to this beach planet to get away, and then Null invades. And it's a lot of it is the relationship between Billy and Tommy, not Billy and Tommy, Billy and Hulkling. What's his name?
I forget it.
I don't know. Anyway, it's really good. I like their bodyguard. It's sort of comedic. It's fun. It's fun relationship stuff. It's got big action in it. This made me want to see a series with these two, like what it would look like being in like what New Mutants did with Space in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
It was super fun. I actually really dug it, and I would like to see more of it. And it's really not a King in Black story. So it is taking place during King in Black, but it's really just a Wiccan and Hulkling story. America Chavez, which I think we all have liked the character,
yeah,
but have not found a comic with her that we've really loved.
Yeah,
I thought this was a good one.
It was. It was very user friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to know the character all that much, other than because everything is run down really well in this, especially like her origins and her connections to the world,
and her powers, and she's teamed up with Hawkeye.
Yep.
Kate Bishop, Hawkeye. The artwork by Carlos Gomez is spectacular.
It is.
There's a shot of her and Kate fighting a giant badger mole.
Yes.
And that's pretty cool.
It feels something out of West Coast Avengers.
Yeah, yeah.
Anna, who really liked West Coast Avengers, was telling me that this starts off kind of lighthearted, and she felt like it was almost like an outro to West Coast Avengers, and then it turns a little more serious as the story kind of becomes its own thing. And I was like, oh, that's kind of an interesting way to do it, where you're kind of capping off another book in some ways and then finding your own feet.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good first issue. It made me almost want to go back and revisit West Coast Avengers, even though I know I didn't really like it that much. I think it's all the Marvel stuff, and then we can talk about the indie stuff.
Sure.
Which is, there's an all-ages book called Jonna and the Impossible Monsters, which is notable because it is artist Chris Samney, who we're all big fans of, writing a story with his wife for their, basically aimed at their three daughters. It is a very all-ages one where there basically is a sister looking for her lost sister in a world full of monsters.
Yep.
Really nice art. Very pretty. James Bond, Agent of Spectre.
What? He's not a member of Spectre. But what is even happening?
He's working for Blofeld. I thought it was interesting that basically, like, this was like, this is a different Blofeld than the one in the movies.
Yeah, it's not Christoph Waltz.
And right. This is still part of the series that was closer to the books,
yeah.
even though they took a few visual cues from the movies, like having Moneypenny as an African-American in this.
And also,
British,
like, they're
African-British.
He references Eidolon, which was the Warren Ellis one that started this whole thing.
That was, literally the first Bond comic from these guys.
So it is still referencing that universe, but... Yeah, basically, Bond winds up undercover with Spectre, and maybe it looks like he might be doing some work for them.
What I heard when I was doing the write-up was that there's some lady in Spectre, and there's going to be, like, an internal civil war over leadership, and that she, like, brings him in to help her out, or maybe he's manipulated into it.
He gets dragged into a Spectre civil war.
Yeah, but that's a cool concept.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I'm about that.
And it's written by Christos Gage, who I know at least Nick and I are big fans of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there is a noir book from Dark Horse called Dead Dog's Bite.
Yep.
This
one's a little bit harder to describe.
Hard to describe it. It's sort of a weird one. It's kind of like that book Fear Case, which has the second issue this week, where I'm like, this is interesting, but I don't know how to pitch it.
Yeah, I would say, like, if you have any sort of fondness for noir or crime stuff, and maybe a little bit on the surreal side of it, to give it a flip through.
Yeah. It's a long talk on comics. Let's take a quick break, and then I will we'll come back to the previous 2 weeks worth of stuff.
Sure.
Okay, so let's talk about last 2 weeks of comics that all came in after the ice storm.
Yeah.
Happened to be, I think, two of the biggest weeks of 2021 so far.
Yes.
I think the most...
given the delays...
Or 2023.
It would not be too unlikely.
But the big hit, I think, that we all want to talk about was the Image book Stray Dogs.
The one that was billed, their own promotion said it was Lady and the Tramp meets Silence of the Lambs.
Yep.
It's written drop by Tony Fleeks, right?
Written by Tony Fleeks.
Oh, that's right. Trish Forstner.
So Tony Fleeks is a My Little Pony artist. He came out for one of our All Ages Adventures.
Right.
And so he's a friend of the store. And this is his writing debut, I think.
I have to compliment, because this is, like, if you were to flip through this, you would think that you were just, at a quick glance, like looking at a Disney or a Don Bluth movie about dogs, where they all have those real visually distinct styles, you know, as you get in cartoons. But there is a dark undercurrent, that's the Silence of the Lambs part, of the possibility that their owner might be a serial killer. And I thought it was actually going to be darker than it was. Now, I don't know how dark it's going to get ultimately, but this is not, like, super bloody. I did not see any point yet, at least so far, where, like, body parts were, like, given to these dogs or whatever. It is more as, like, of a mystery, because there's this little... I think I looked this up, and is it a toy spaniel or something? What are they called?
I can't remember her name.
That sounds
there's
right.
There's a little shaky dog. It's one of those little quivering dogs, and... She's taken in by like a foster or
well, it opens with like a vet visit for her with like her original owner,
right?
And then all of a sudden it kind of cuts to a house with the new owner, essentially,
right? And they specifically mentioned this dog does not have like a really good long term memory.
Right.
Well,
I think most dogs are not supposed to have like short-term memory, or like
Actually, I guess they say short-term memory.
Yeah, short-term memory.
So next thing she knows, she's like arriving at this house where there's like it's like somebody's like is fostering like a dozen dogs, and they're all different types, and they do talk in the Disney style. You get that vibe that it's although they don't spell it out. Only they can understand each other. It's not like humans are talking to them. And they are kind of realistic. They tend to be thinking about food, what's safe. They introduce her. There's like a nice dog that kind of tours her around the place. There's like some gruff dogs too.
Yeah.
And different, like they all have different personalities. And a lot of times just looking, you'll get kind of a vibe of what they're like. But she's clearly scared, and she has like some sort of hazy memories that suggests maybe some darker stuff. And that's you know, I don't want to say too much, but that's kind of like, that's the setup for it.
Yeah.
Now, really, I got to say, look at this, because the star of it is, in a lot of ways, is the artwork. So anybody should check this out. These dogs look like, that looks like Balto.
There's a lot of nods. There's a Dalmatian.
Yeah.
There's definitely some nods.
Yeah, you will see some Disney visual nods to that. But it's kind of an emotional story. This poor panicked dog's anxiety is palpable.
Yeah.
By the way, Dave, there are some clues in here to the. I mean, we do see some flashbacks from her eyes of like,
yep. right?
Him, he clearly did kill her owner. At least that's what she was remembering.
Yes.
And also there's a bit here where the dogs were like, "Hey, I can't find that stick. What stick? The super cool one, the one you found in the box." And I'm like, "Oh, is that a bone?
Yeah, that's gonna be like a femur or something like that. No doubt.
And also, I noticed when they show the guy, we only really see him. We never see his face. We only see him from like dog point of view.
Yeah.
But they have a shot of his room where all the dogs are sleeping, and he's got all these like animals like, mounted on the wall and guns, and he looks like a hunter type.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're gonna find out he is a serial killer.
Yeah.
It's a very smart story.
Yeah.
Just really well executed from both you know, writing and art perspective.
It's such a weird premise.
It is.
But yeah, I think like if that basic premise like interests you. If you kind of are fascinated by stories like Watership Down that play like the animal talking animals a little more realistically, although it's not that quite that realistic,
right? Because they are talking dogs.
They're talking dogs. But yeah, if any of that, if you would like to see a somewhat twisted and slightly darker take on Disney that is not like wildly dark, it's worth a look.
Yeah, it's a
Garth Ennis did 1 year ago that was wildly dark.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Forgotten that.
Yeah, that was gross.
Another big image book from last week, Two Moons by John Arcudi, who's been doing Rumble. Artist Valerio Gengordano.
Beautiful artwork.
Yeah. Reminded me a bit of Tim Truman doing his Western work and stuff like that.
This is a Civil War era horror book, basically.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, the lead is a Native American, maybe like son of his village, like the shaman for his tribe. And he has connections. There's a very creepy, that spectral thing on the first page that I think, goes into the tent where he's sleeping. It's a cool premise.
He basically starts, doesn't he shoot somebody and discovers, like, oh, it's a monster?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah.
That was last week, Randy. I don't remember anything.
I believe he's working for this guy. He's the Union Army. And he starts discovering that his Union commander is like a monster.
It is a cool kind of creepy like Western book, but specifically through the lens of like the Union and through some like heightened Native American magic stuff. I would recommend it.
Yeah, it's good. Marvel stuff from last week. There was the Snapshots Captain Marvel. All these one shots have been really good. This is a Mark Waid one.
I thought this was particularly good. And
I did too.
All these snapshots are standalones, right?
Yep.
And they're just like scattered throughout Marvel's history.
And it's a girl who idolizes Captain Marvel, but then she meets Miss Marvel, who also used to idolize Captain Marvel.
She's kind of like this. This girl's a little bit of an outcast, like kind of punk rocker, veering to genderqueer, I think.
Yeah.
And doesn't quite know what she wants to do with her life, and then she kind of inadvertently stumbles into some of her heroes.
Yeah.
And they're like investigating this like downed alien ship.
Yeah, it's a spaceship.
Yeah, and she's able to kind of like chat with them a little bit. And it's really cool.
I really like the Miss Marvel Captain Marvel interaction here, and that this girl who's like, she's all fanboying over Miss Marvel, who at her time used to fangirl over Captain Marvel, which I think is kind of fun.
Yeah, no, it was a really, really strong issue, and I would say like whether you like Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, Mark Waid, or just want to read an interesting story, like an Astro City type of story that's about something, it's well worth a look.
X-Men Legends was another big one last week. Nick, I did not read this. I know you did, though.
I have not had a chance.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I haven't read any of the X books from the past couple of weeks. I'm behind, but I know this is a untold story. By Fabian Nicieza and art by Brett Booth about the third Summers brother, Adam X the Extreme.
Also, I see Eric the Red in here.
Eric the Red.
Are we the only ones who call him Adam X the Extreme these days?
No, he's just Adam X, right? That's his name.
It's Adam his name.
X the Extreme.
Do they say that in the comics and
I believe
stuff?
They do.
Oh my goodness.
I'm looking to see.
Surely they must just call him Adam X.
Actually, I think they just call him Adam. Adam. So.
Yeah, okay. But, like, this series, the whole premise is that every issue, I think... Every two issues, okay. We'll jump to a different X-Men era. And instead of... But not just throwaway lost stories. These are kind of going to be canonical ones.
Yep.
And I think they're kind of actually even going to be pushing to make sure they're kind of relevant.
Yeah, this one is, like, with Corsair and, with all the Summers lineage. The next one I think they're going to do on starting with issue 3 is Louise and Walt Simonson are coming back for an X-Factor story.
Oh, interesting. They didn't quite kick it off. It was, who wrote the very earliest ones?
Of X-Factor?
X-Factor. It wasn't like Bob Layton, no?
It was Bob Layton, actually.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
But she was like the second person, and she took over like even before the first year was out, I think.
Yeah, and they so stayed they, on for
They had
the
a
end?
Pretty prominent run, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she was writing it like when, Wilche Portacio took over on art and stuff.
Yeah. I'm curious about it. I think it's a good concept for a series.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Like, even if you didn't, get every issue, you could look in and see, oh, they're doing my X-Men era.
Exactly.
I want to check that out. Or, I always wanted to know more about that X-Men era. Randy, this is a quick sidestep to another indie one. I don't know which week this landed. But there was, from Aftershock Comics, was a book called Nuclear Family.
Yeah.
Which, I think if I hadn't made the sign for it and looked a little into it, I wouldn't have known. But it's based on a Philip K. Dick short story called Breakfast at Twilight. And I really liked this, and I liked the very detailed artwork in it.
Tony Chastain.
Who dat?
Who did we determine? It was
Occult Crimes Task Force of Rosario Dawson's.
Yeah. Oh, man, he's that was, good art, but this is better.
Yeah.
Anyway, it follows a, used car salesman in the 50s who was, in Korea, and he's got a slightly skeevy partner at the shop, and he goes home, and it's kind of like normal family problems going on when a nuke hits nearby, and it looks like, in that sort of tradition of Philip K. Dick's sort of heightened alternate worlds or something, this is a world where Russia invades, but I'm not sure if it may be as much about the kind of paranoid scare about it, anti-communist fears, maybe more parodied, but I actually found the characters compelling in it. This is even sometimes even when you're doing maybe something with a satirical element, you want some characters real enough to hang your hat on.
Yeah.
And even though a kind of traditional 50s family sounds boring, it's literally a cliche. The writing on it was actually all pretty interesting. And it's when the bomb goes off, it's scary. And there's I don't know, maybe it's just because we had that ice storm recently and how we're having to think about those kind of survival elements. This notion of I almost want to jokingly call this Philip K. Dick's Red Dawn, because I think this guy who was in Korea, I think in the next issue or something, it sounded like he maybe prepares to create a counter, counter warfare group or something like that.
Yeah.
But he's kind of clean cut dad. I don't know where this is going, and knowing Philip K. Dick, I probably couldn't guess where it's going. But
yeah.
It's a good first issue.
So I had to look up Tony Chastain because I knew he'd worked on something more recent.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the Star Trek Terra Incognita story.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He was one of the other artists on that. Wait, which one was that one? Was that one of the Third Mirror Universe? Or
I believe it's the one with the... Was it the Wesley that came back onto the ship?
Or Barclay. Yeah,
Barclay.
Okay, that's interesting. I think his art looks better here on this than it did on that. I like those the story there, but I thought... I think his art didn't jump out for me quite as much there. I think so. It's good stuff.
And then Aftershock also had Shadow Doctor number 1, which has art by Georges Janty. Some really nice art.
Did you get... I wanted to get around to this. Have you read it yet?
I have not read it.
Because the premise is super interesting.
It's based on a real story, right? It's of a doctor, an African-American doctor who became...
In, the 1930s or 20s.
Yeah.
Who got his medical license but couldn't secure a loan to open his practice.
Oh, interesting.
And so he gets a loan from Al Capone's mob.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, a real historical... This person existed.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how, if they do a heightened version of the story or not, but I was that is a story I am interested to know about.
There's also Vault has a new book called Hollow Heart, which I didn't get a chance to read, but is, as with all things Vault, looks really cool.
Yeah, it sounded like a kind of a weird psychological horror sort of thing, or sci-fi about somebody who is, trapped in one of those kind of, a containment suit.
So kind of like The Coffin, remember The Coffin way back
then? Yeah. Or even, I always think of, characters from, Legion of Superheroes, Wildfire.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. People who, you are stuck in this suit. And I think the person did have, it was, had to do with, containing some sort of weird mutant disease.
And then Marvel has another installment of their Voices one-shots. This one is all focused on African-American characters. So there's short stories in here featuring Miles Morales and Shuri and Storm, Blade, Domino. So this is just a bunch of little short stories with the different artists, different writers that looks pretty cool.
Yep.
And then I just want to mention the Department of Truth trade paperback came out.
If you have $10 laying around, really, buy this book.
This is my favorite book right now.
It's probably my favorite one going on right now as well.
It's another winner from James Tinian of Something is Killing the Children, but he also has been writing Batman, he was the one that we talked about who just kicked it off this week. Was he writing Detective prior to that, or was that...
He wrote the Joker War stuff, too.
Yeah, okay, so he's been doing Batman for a little bit. Yeah, yeah. He's a guy who's done both mainstream stuff. He did Detective years ago when it was the team book with Batwoman that was really good.
He's hitting higher highs right now.
It seems like his indie stuff is maybe where he's most peaking, though.
Yeah.
And without giving away too much about this, this is a series that has kind of a heightened spin on a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, it's sort of a conspiracy book. It's got a little bit of X-Files to it. It's really, really good.
And you'd say there's kind of a notable hook to it once you get just a little ways.
But I don't want
to
give away the...
But I don't want to give away it
either. I'm just saying, if you got $10, pick it up.
I think we all would recommend it. Dave is not as into it, has not read as far into it as Nick and I have.
Yeah.
But Nick and I haven't read every issue.
Nick will think you're a cheap bastard if you don't pony up for it.
I would almost throw a staff guarantee on it.
I would do that.
I've done that before. Yeah, yeah. I would do that with Kill or Be Killed.
The only other stuff I have to mention, just real quick, I want to say King in Black number 4 came out last week and has a big reveal at the end of it that I really, really liked.
Yeah, that was actually one of the coolest ideas that I've seen in a little while.
Remind me to ask y'all about it off mic.
Yeah, tying a long in existence Marvel thing into Null in a way that made perfect sense.
Yeah.
Black Cat, another King in Black tie-in, which is basically Black Cat facing off with Mystic Power and
shooting up. I asked you what Jed McKay was doing for Black Cat, and you were like, Null pissed Black Cat off, and now she's trying to steal something from it. I'm like, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. I mean, that's great.
And she's working with Doctor Strange, who she's previously robbed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, another issue of Thor by Donny Cates, in which this new evil Donald Blake faces off with Valkyrie-ized Jane Foster and Throg.
Yay, and Lockjaw.
And people have been like, when a new Thor issue hits, it's kind of like a thing right now.
Thor's
people are like, is
right
the new
now.
Thor hit yet? Yep. Is it coming out next week?
Do you guys have anything else on your stacks?
I think we've hit it all for me.
I mean, all the X-Books.
Oh, yeah, all the X-Books, right. It was a big week. It was a good week. There's a lot of stuff.
We
this
probably
week,
missed
couple.
Some things.
Arcade shows up in Hellions, and I'm excited.
Arcade shows up in Hellions. that's it for comics for the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Superman and Lois. Okay, so we don't have a lot of topics this week. We real quick want to talk about CW's new show, Superman and Lois, which I think I was excited for, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be anything more than just another CW show.
Well, yeah, we saw that trailer not too long ago, and it was like, oh, it looks kind of dark and kind of depressing.
Yeah, I thought it looked good, and I figured I'd watch it, but when it actually debuted, I was not in a hurry to watch it until I started hearing decent buzz.
Yeah, I think Nick was the first of us to watch it.
Yeah, it just popped up. I remember recording it, and Kaylee saw it on the DVR, and she's like, we should watch this. And I was like, all right. So I was folding laundry, and it was a heck of a lot of fun.
It's really good. It starts off with... It starts off with Superman in his, Golden Age uniform, which they did perfectly.
Yep.
And they did a riff on a beloved page from the Superman for All Seasons.
And they have him kind of sort of recapping his life
in a way
that really captures, the heart of Superman. If you don't in the first 5 or 10 minutes feel like, oh, they know what they're doing, then I think you don't know what Superman is.
Yeah.
You're the problem.
Well, I'm blanking on the actor's name, but he does a great job as
Tyler
Clark.
Hoechlin.
Yeah, Tyler Hoechlin.
I was not sure I was going to like him either with his weird perpetual 5 o'clock shadow. or Lois, for that matter. But, I pretty quickly started to feel that they were... I don't know if they're my ideal Lois and Clark, but they were ideal for the story that's being told here.
Well,
they
popped up on a lot of the crossovers and things like that, and I've always enjoyed them. But this, getting to sort of flesh those characters out a little bit more And even my brain was like, oh, he's got two sons?
Teenage kids, yeah.
And they don't know he's Superman? Even though my brain was like, wait, that's kind of silly. The way they do it and the reasons that Clark has for sort of keeping his secret, I was like, I kind of buy it.
Yeah. So I thought that this was actually much better than I thought it was going to be. It was, like, super good, yep. I thought. And to the point where, like, in almost any given scene, I was like, oh, I like that. Oh, that's an idea I didn't expect, but I like that. And the basic premise is what was pretty obvious from the trailer, which is that things are... I guess, do we want to say what the catalyst is, the kind of sad thing that happens? Or should we
leave that? No, we should leave that. Yeah, but something happens that sends Clark and Lois and the kids back to Smallville, where they used to visit every now and then.
There's job issues with the Daily Planet.
Yep.
And then
Smallville, they're definitely doing a thing about the rural, how farms are being taken over by corporate farms and how banks are taking advantage and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Lana Lang, who does not know who Superman is in this one, she doesn't know Clark.
Yep.
Is married, has a daughter who has sort of a flirtatious thing with one of Clark's sons.
Yep.
And basically things wind up where they decide to stay and
Try to make a life for a little while in Smallville.
Yeah.
At the same time, there is intrigue going on. Sam Lane, Lois's dad, is in this, and he knows his secret.
I loved what they did with him and Sam Lane, because Sam Lane is always like he hates.
They have
him.
A kind of uneasy friendship.
Yeah, they developed a relationship that is still complicated. He tells Lois at one point, he's like, "You married." He said, "I told you when you married him, you married Superman. He doesn't get to have the normal life he wanted to have." I'm like, this is interesting because. Yep. We've always seen Sam Lane not liking Superman for other reasons, but sort of the, like, not being sure about it because he's like, you're great. I like Superman's really helpful, but you can't be the father
right,
of my
like,
daughter.
It's like saying someone, like, you married a police officer or whatever, this is going to be his life. But he's also, there's some sides to him that you don't usually see because he usually is just a hard ass. Like, he's like, hey, I'm going to take you, you know, if your boy's around next weekend, I'll take him fishing.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's a bit more of a likable version of a guy who still is a hard ass.
Played by Dylan Walsh.
Dylan Walsh is great.
From Nip Tuck.
Yeah. These, you know, that's a common thing, I think, the softening of a grandfatherly figure. Once they see that you have your family because you're the father of their grandkids.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting thing. Like, we don't see it because they're already teenagers.
Yeah.
But you can read that whole story of, like, oh, he probably didn't like him. Then he found out he was Superman. He probably really didn't like him. And then
suddenly, he saw he was caring for two kids that were his daughter's kids.
Yeah.
And he bonded.
Yeah. And I really like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's also not completely without action.
Well, so that's what I was leading into when I mentioned Sam Lane?
Yeah.
Is that he and Superman are dealing with these attacks on nuclear power plants.
Yep.
Which have their own sort of strange mystery to them, and there will ultimately be a mysterious armored figure and some fighting and, some A-list special effects.
Great fights, yeah.
Like movie-level special effects.
But, I mean, how he handles a nuclear reactor that is basically nearing meltdown.
That opening scene was so good.
It's so Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yeah.
It's so perfect.
I turned to Kayla and I was like, that's Superman. That's what he would do.
The effects were, by the way, good. Like, good. The way he, like, looked while he was doing it and, like, carrying this giant thing. It was super good.
By the way, one of the things I love is that Superman does get in a fight with a guy in like, power armor, basically.
Yep.
But a lot of what he's doing here is Superman doing rescue work, saving a nuclear power reactor. They did an homage to his crashing the criminal's car from Action Comics, but it's actually him saving a car.
Yeah.
It's like rescuing someone. And
kind of inverted that early sort of roughneck Superman and in favor of, like, the rescuer Superman.
And I think that's one of the things, like, Zack Snyder is so invested in Superman battling across the city and the damage he can do, whereas this is about what was someone with this power level when he wanted to help someone.
Yeah, how can he help? Yeah. And so the thing that I was most concerned about was probably the teen angsty CW kid stuff. And let me tell you, there is some teen angst in there, but I thought they had a pretty good take on it.
It works.
Where he's got one son who's very much this kind of sullen outsider kid who deals with, like, heavy anxiety issues. And I thought, kind of amusingly, at one point Clark goes in to try and do a little dad bonding with him, and it kind of flops. And the kid is playing that Mortal Kombat versus DC game, and he's playing the character literally beating up Superman. And if, like, Clark misthinks, he's like,
Superman's really cool.
Yeah, and then he's like, I'm not playing Superman. Anyway, for a sullen kid, I ended up kind of being fascinated by this kid and the way things develop with the, you know, his, like, attempted kind of romance with somebody in Smallville, and their, you know, the kids, especially his brother, who's kind of like a popular jock type, kind of picks on him. And is a little bit of a shit sometimes.
But doesn't pick on him. Like, they have a relationship, the two of them.
Well, they do, but...
It was kind of in a brotherly kind of way, but he
would... I don't know. I felt like he was pushing it a little bit to the point where, like, that brother, who I think probably was a little sensitive to it, was feeling it. You don't think they were portraying that?
No, I don't. No. I thought they were portraying them as, like, they were brothers.
Could be kind of a schmuck to other people.
They're very close. I will revisit it, but I think there was a bit of an edge to it.
I don't know. I think when the secret comes out, the two of them basically go off together.
Like, it's true.
And the other brother is always protective of his brother. Is the, like, the medication? And all, he's like making sure he takes medication.
Yeah, it's,
like,
true.
He is definitely being the good son. Like, they did not make Superman as one shit kid. It's like,
well, he was also the one towards the end of the altercation that occurs. And he was the one who basically came to his brother's defense.
Really quick. I really like that, because another thing I think they could have done is, like, made the jock kid kind of obnoxious. Made the angsty kid too angsty. I thought they walked a really good line in making both those characters really likable. I like the brother relationships.
And that scene where they're at the party where things kind of go badly was pretty dramatic.
It was.
Like, it was. I was like, I don't know where this is going to go exactly.
There's sophistication here in the way they do, like, dealing with teens and anxiety and medication. Mm-hmm. And the...
it's not just a gimmick hook.
The economic stuff around Smallville. I even found Lana's... firefighter husband, who is, like, basically, he gripes at Lois about how you guys should keep your politics out of your papers, that's why the papers are dying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they made him kind of, I didn't like him, but
he's,
I was like,
one step from
they,
saying fake news,
but they made him sympathetic,
which was
interesting. So
I think just by virtue of being married to Lana Lang, that we would like for him to not be a scumbag. He's a I don't like him,
yeah.
But I don't dislike the character.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where they go with this. I wonder if they're gonna, just based on how they did with, like, medication and social anxiety, I wonder if they're gonna get into some of the genderqueer stuff and stuff that would, in Smallville, is gonna be very different than it would be in Metropolis, and if they're gonna deal with what it's like for teenagers these days and that kind of thing.
I think in using Smallville as the setting, I think they have actually ended up opening doors that were unexpected and interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my hope, and I honestly did not expect them to sort of pull it off, but only an episode in, it feels like they might be pulling it off.
I was very skeptical of the Smallville setting. I thought that was going to be a big misstep, but it turns out I kind of like it. Yeah.
We're also getting a Morgan Edge, it seems.
And Morgan Edge is, like, the bad guy moving behind the scenes, yeah.
Yep.
And then, of course, the big reveal of who the bad guy is, which was, I can't wait to see more of it.
It's cool, and there's still, and there is a big mystery about it, which I think has some neat implications.
Which Randy's already thrown a theory at me, and I'm like,
it's a
I
good
like
one.
This theory.
It's a good
I
one.
I want it to be true.
Yeah, it's not my theory, I stole it from somebody else, but, I...
By the way, that armor looks cool.
It does.
It does.
Just,
yeah.
So
it's a really good pilot. I think we're all looking forward to seeing the second episode this week.
That's right, tonight.
Yep. All right, that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.